What is up, guys? Jerry with Sheepdog Ops here. We got another great episode headed up for you guys. I know you guys don't see Mike. Mike's not around tonight. He had school tonight, and he's probably actually sleeping, seeing as we're doing this at like 12:30 in the morning my time. And I know our guest here, Dell, will be a little bit ahead of time of me. That's this gentleman. Well, actually, this way. I got to remember that it's all backwards for me. So you guys know me. I'm Jerry Schuber. I'm your normal sultry voice every week that you get to hear. And I know that you guys are upset that Mike's here, not here, but we're going to carry on as if he was. And I got to give that shout out to Battle Rattle and him. They always hook us up, take care of us, make sure we have a platform, make sure we have some sweet gear to hand out to these people who come on here. And we appreciate all our guests' time. Dell, I definitely appreciate your time. So as we carry on right now, our guest today is Dell Lopez. He's actually a firefighter out in Albuquerque, right?
Yes, sir.
And I'm going to give him an opportunity to kind of introduce himself. He's got a small career, but he's got a lot of knowledge because he's not your young pup, normal kid that you'd see joining the fire squad there. So as we do, go ahead, Dell, it's all on you.
Yeah, I do appreciate you talking about me not being a young pup. I know I look really, really young, but I'm actually at the age of 32 at this moment. So I actually did join the fire department at a very, very old age, which I would actually probably say is very common in other states, but in New Mexico, people get in around 24. So I got in at the age of 28. And, you know, I've been in for about 3.5 years. And it's actually pretty interesting nowadays because our age group used to be, you had to be at least 21 to be a firefighter in our department. But we recently changed things and we actually changed it to the age of 18 because we noticed there was a huge decline of people interested in firefighting. Because, you know, when you're in high school, when you just graduate at the age of 18, you had to wait 3 years to become a firefighter. And so you were going to school, and then at that point, you don't want to drop out of school to become a firefighter and then not make as much in doing other things, business degrees or whatever. So we actually made a pretty good change in moving that to 18, I think.
That's a great question, especially when you're battling kids who want to be a first responder. And if you're setting this age the same, because obviously as an officer or a police officer, you have to be 21 because you may be dealing with alcohol or you may be dealing with things that require you to be 21 years old. And as a firefighter, you don't have to deal with those things, do you? Or are those the same kind of things?
You know, honestly, like you're saying, like alcohol, you're going to see alcohol, drugs, everything out there is going to be exactly the same thing. Probably any cop will see. Obviously, we're dealing with the same clientele, the same people, same community. It's just on a different level, I would say. And it's cops are meant to be, what do I want to say, more like a lone wolf. They have to be able to function as an individual and take charge by themselves. But the one thing about the fire service is we're always a team, you know. We always have at least 4 people on a truck that we're always rolling together. So I think maybe with that age thing, you know, they don't want an 18-year-old little punk running around in his own car, you know, doing
and with way too much authority and being able to do whatever he wanted to do.
Little 18-year-old, you know, they think they know everything, and they probably didn't want them sitting in a car by themselves at that age. But like in the firefighter service, you're coming in at 18, you're at the bottom of the totem pole, and there's going to be 3 people in that truck that are above you, and you have to pretty much follow. So I think it's a pretty good move, and it makes sense in the fire service, but I don't know if it would make sense in police for sure.
It's definitely a little bit different there as far as structure goes. Now, as somebody who came in as a rookie, as obviously you're much older than what you're seeing as most rookies coming in, how did that affect you walking in and being part of a team and stuff like that? Because it's going to be different, right?
And that's the other thing. I think I actually got the hazing of a 18-year-old though, because when I did come out, everyone just took one look at me and they said, oh, this guy is 21, 22. This guy already thinks he knows everything. He already has a little chip on his shoulder that thinks he's better than everybody.
Maybe 14.
So everyone like came out just like shots fired. Oh, who do you know? Who are you related to? How did you get into this department like at your age? And myself, you know, I'm not one to really want to open up and say everything and just put all the playing cards out, because if you know firefighters, if they know everything about you, they will exploit everything about you. So I just was like, oh no, I just applied. I don't know anybody, which I didn't. I honestly had no idea what the fire service was all about. I just kind of fell into it. And I'll definitely tell you that whole story as it plays out. But so like at my age, it was kind of weird because I would love to say that I came in as an older guy, and I've seen it with other older guys. Like it was completely different from the treatment that I got. They just treated me like, and they still do. And they still do. I think I'm honestly the only one at my station right now that is not married or have any kids. They still call me baby Dave at the group. So
that ain't bad.
I wish I could tell you how it felt coming out as an older individual.
Being called baby.
They call me baby Dave. So I don't know if it's the face or the personality or both or whatever, but
I'm going to say both. I'm just going to take a swing at the fence. It's both. I've seen a little bit of the side personality and stuff like that. I'm going to say it's both. But that kind of leads me into this whole thing. You know, you're saying that people are asking you how you got into this. Who do you know? And we talked about this before we got on air and we started recording everything. But we were talking about your last name because obviously you live in an area. If we're not going to be too overly sensitive about things, where there's probably quite a bit of Lopez's being in New Mexico.
Are you assuming my last name? No, yeah, there are quite a bit of Lopez's in the area. So when I did come out there, I probably want to say that I at least know 8 other firemen that have the last name Lopez, and they're really high ranked like officials in the fire service. So they all assume I was either a nephew, cousin, son, whatever of one of these. And so with firemen, they said the only way you're going to get in at that point is if you know somebody or if you are a family member. And they're pretty much considered legacies. And I actually want to tell you this. I'm actually really, really happy with our department nowadays because it's no longer like that. If you actually know your stuff, you train really hard, you're able to get in just as an average Joe like myself just walking in. And so that's actually why I'm really proud of my department, because there's still departments out there that you really can't join unless you really know somebody or volunteered for years on end.
It's a good old boys club and things like that. You know what? We find that around, especially areas that I'm in, because we're in little smaller towns where I'm at. So if you don't know somebody, it's extremely hard to get in. And just walking in off the street, because I've been trying to do that myself with being a police officer and stuff like that, just trying to find my niche.
Joining the wrong team.
blue all the way. You can keep your red. We can go back and forth on this all day. But I am built to talk at people and not try to talk to them. So,
but yeah, let me, I guess what I kind of want to share is my whole experience of how I actually decided to become a fireman.
That is exactly where I was going to go with the next thing. So without further ado, get into it. I really want to know what made you, because obviously you had a career or you had a job before you stepped where you are, and to change completely, that's got to be whatever you did, you know?
So, my family, we have an extensive amount of teachers in my family. So whenever I started college, I wasn't doing so great. Like I think I let the whole college scene just kind of get to me, where, you know, you're not going to classes, you're kind of messing around, hanging out with people outside of school rather than actually showing up to classes. So I kind of had this like little falling out with school until one of my friends moved back and he was like, hey bro, like I want to go to UNM, University of New Mexico, and I want to be a teacher. And I said, weird, that's exactly what I was going for. And he goes, well, let's do it together. So I started getting back into the groove of things. I was going to school to be a teacher and just going and going. School did not interest me, and which is really bad to say. Kids, don't listen to what I have to say about this. School is very important. It just, it was hard for me.
I think you're wrong. That's the whole reason I joined the military to begin with, was I didn't want to waste money at school. So, kids, so school, if you don't want to waste money at school, find something else.
Yes, yes. So like school, you know, it just really didn't really get to me that much. So I was actually working as a lifeguard, like a pool lifeguard for the city of Rio Rancho, which is a neighboring city to Albuquerque. I was doing that full time and then also going to school full time. And then one day, I probably want to say I had just finished my associates in early childhood development. And I was sitting around with my uncle and my aunt. They're both teachers. And my uncle asked me, why do you want to be a teacher? And I looked at him and I said, well, first off, you know, you get to teach kids, which I've been doing forever as a lifeguard. You know, I teach swim lessons, been a coach, doing all that stuff, and just seeing them like develop is just awesome. So I was like, oh yeah, I just want to teach kids. Not to mention you get summers off and holidays, you get I'm thinking about all these perks, you know. And then my uncle just looked at me straight in the face and he goes, but do you think you have the personality for it? And he goes, I know you like to run off and do your own thing and do things your way, but they've changed education where you can no longer teach the way that you individually want to teach. They pretty much set like a structure where you're just reading out of a book. And I see it now with my best friend. Like, he's a kindergarten teacher and he's just told pretty much to read out of a book. You can't bring out yourself in anything that you do.
Yeah. See, and I have kids, so I understand that the fact that, like, especially in the state of California, we have a very strict curriculum and things that they have to follow. And a lot of these school districts have so much that they have to jam pack into a 9-month year, mm-hmm. basically, that it makes it impossible for a teacher to individualize anything that they have. So I can totally understand where you're coming from, what you're saying, that it changes your outlook on what you want to do and how you want to do it.
Yeah. He just pretty much just said, I know your personality. It's not going to be fit for teaching. And I was like, and if you actually do know me on a personal level, my personality is a little over the top and very unteacher-like, I would assume.
We'll say goofy. We can say goofy.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's fun and goofy. I get you.
So, you know, I had that whole conversation with my family that day. And then the very next day, I actually went back to the pool and I was working and I was simply just talking to my boss. I just told her, hey, you know, I just got my associates. I had this talk with my uncle and he said that I shouldn't become a teacher, but this is like the direction I've been going. And then she actually just looked at me and said, have you ever thought of being a firefighter? Like, just looked at me dead in the eyes and just said, have you ever thought about being a firefighter? And my first reaction was exactly this. When she told me that, I looked at her and then I went, no, I've never thought about being a firefighter, because, you know, you see those calendars, there's these big buff dudes and whatnot. And I was like, honestly, no, I've never thought of it. And she goes, I think you'd be great for it, because you know all EMS, because here lifeguarding, you know all basic EMS. You have been an instructor for lifeguards this entire time. You're already like above most of the EMS stuff. And then she goes, and don't worry about the physical part. We'll get you there, is what she told me. And I was like, how do you know all this? And she goes, well, my ex-husband used to be a firefighter, so I already know all the stuff that they go through. And I was like, oh, okay. So I looked into it right away. I looked into it, and it said that I just needed an EMT basic. And the application was going to be 8 months away from the date that I started talking to her. So for those 8 months, I got my EMT basic and I was working out, but I was doing very firefighter heavy workouts, like things that were designed that they do at the academy and stuff that she already had all the insight on. So I got lucky on that one.
So not so much pool stuff and lifeguarding stuff, but actual lifting and running and cardio and stuff like that, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of cardio. And then it was just pretty much like rope pulling, hose drags, sledgehammer work, just a bunch of things that they would do in the combat challenge. And so that was actually a pretty good 8 months of my life that I was actually really determined. And it was just weird because it was out of the blue, just one day, hey, just be a firefighter. And I was like, I've never thought of it, but okay, let's try it out.
Let's give this a whirl. We'll figure out what this whole thing's all about.
So definitely. So then the way the application process happens is they break it down first. They have different dates that you got to go, and it's
Let me ask one question before we get into it, because I do want to hear this, and I know that we have listeners that want to hear this. If you were to give one piece of advice to somebody who says, hey, I want to prep to get ready for this, what is the biggest piece of advice as far as getting ready to join an academy? Because I know the fire academy is not easy, no matter what state you go through.
And I would say probably my biggest advice for anybody going into a fire academy, you know, everyone always wants to say to be physically strong, be athletic, be fast or something like that. But I will say the biggest thing that you need is family support and being able to be mentally strong. Like if you get picked on and torn down really easily, then it's definitely not going to be for you, because that's all it is just mental warfare. And then whenever you go home or you need someone to lean on and no one's there, that's when you would fall apart. So I would say definitely a good support system and just being mentally strong, because obviously you can tell I'm not physically strong. I was able to excel at doing things just based on those two things alone.
Now, if you're listening to the audio only, I suggest you go over to the YouTube page and you give this a listen or give this a watch. You'll really see what he's talking about. He's not the biggest guy. Yeah, when it comes to size, definitely not.
maybe pushing 160.
At 60. I remember when I was 160.
Yeah, what was it, like third grade maybe?
The fuego is coming at me. I see it.
Yes, sir. But yeah, no, definitely. And the thing is, the whole mental thing, it's something you're going to need for the whole career, because you just have to be mentally strong for most of the things that you actually are going to see and get out there. So
I think that's been a fair assessment across everyone that I've interviewed, anyone that I've talked to who was some kind of, and we call this sheepdogs, the sheepdog mindset that you have, because as we are a group of people who are willing to protect and take care of the sheep, as it were, the people who do the day-to-day jobs and do the day-to-day tasks, not thinking about the danger that's actually out there. It really is, a lot of it is mental. And a lot of it is jokes. I think that's how we get through it. We all have a sick humor that's inappropriate for day-to-day people. And as somebody who was military, who went through boot camp and stuff, I'd say the same thing. The biggest part is being mentally capable of handling the, I would say, we can call it torture because we're on the other end of it, but the stress that they put on you mentally is huge. And that's actually, this is the first time I think someone has brought that up, to remember that before you join this, you need to have a support system. And I love the fact that you brought that up, Del. I really appreciate it, because that's a huge sticking point that I don't think everyone brings up, the fact that once you get into the career and everything you do after you get out of the career, but no one ever brings up the parts that you have to lead into it. I think that's huge. So I appreciate it. Now we can get into.
I was lucky enough to have the best support system. Like I could not have done it without my family, my boss, like just having everyone surround me. And they know I'm an individual that does not like to lose. So they were definitely calling, oh, you're going to fail. I'll see you next week. All this stuff, you know, but it was because that's what they knew that motivated me. And so I really, if I were to thank anybody, I would definitely thank that support system for getting me where I am. I can't say I would have done it alone for sure.
That's amazing. That's incredible. And I hope you end up sending this links to those guys and that they can see this and that they can see how much you appreciate them. Cause you can tell I have bosses like that, that I, to this day, I still text and make sure I let them know how much they mean to me as far as stupid lessons of calling me an idiot, when I was younger, that kind of stuff. So now that we've gotten past the mushy gushy stuff, we can get right back into the application process and what it takes to kind of take those steps that you were talking about.
Yep. All right. So for our fire service, the application process was a 5 to 6 month series. And so now, obviously, age of 18, we are not even requiring a EMT basic. They're actually going to be teaching that in the academy. So all you have to do is be an age 18 with a couple of college credits, and you can do those in high school nowadays. You can just get up to, I think, like it's 18 college credits or whatever. Mm-hmm. So even maybe one semester of college, that's what it's equivalent to. So as long as you reach those two things, obviously never had any type of past record, you know, those cops, you know, they keep track of that stuff. So if you don't have any of that, then you're good to go. The first test was in January, and that was the written test. All it is simple, like simple stuff that you would see on just like an entry exam to anything. And simple math, simple reading, sciences. That was it. You know, once you pass that, if you did pass that, then you're already out. So you had to pass all stages of this application process. So they grade that. If you pass that, then they give you another date. And the next step was a pack test. What you had to do is you had to wear a 50-pound vest, and you had to walk. You couldn't run. You actually had to walk 3 miles under 45 minutes. So if they saw that you were actually jogging, running, or any of that sort, then they would disqualify you. So you actually had to walk. So during that whole thing, like I really trained for it on hills and stuff because I knew it was going to be flat ground. Mm-hmm. And I watched a couple of speed walking videos. I'm not going to lie. I did do that.
Got those hips moving?
Yeah, dude.
Hips and do, ba-boom, 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 ba-boom.
Luckily, my legs are a little bit longer than most. So, you know, really that is. Yeah. And then this entire time, it's like a competitive thing to me. Like, you know, they're only going to take the top people that are going, because out of, I think, the year that I applied, there was over 500 people that applied, and they were only going to take, I think, 70.
Okay.
And so, well, they were going to take 40 for this is all right. Let me explain. They were going to take 40. So then that was that. And then the next part was, if you passed that, then they had this thing called the CPAT challenge. And what it is it's pretty much like a fireman's obstacle course. And the entire time you do it with the weighted vest, you have to go from like stair climbing, sledgehammers, crawling around in dark rooms, raising ladders, dragging.
So it's nothing like those videos you see on YouTube of firemen scaling a wall like 15, you know, and you know, they're running through that course and, you know, like 15 seconds all of a sudden.
Yeah, I would tell you if that was a requirement, then we probably wouldn't have any firefighters here. But actually you could look it up on, there are videos of the CPAT challenge on YouTube, and that I looked that up just to kind of prep me for it. So, and you have to do that under a certain time. If you don't, then that's your fail. And then they have also auto fails if you do certain things out of their practices or whatever. So that was the third step, and then the final step was a oral boards interview, where they have a chief in there, they have a captain, and then another EMS worker. and you're sitting in front of them and they're asking you questions, just bombarding you with these questions, trying to make you feel uncomfortable, see how you are in these type of situations. And
what was the worst question that you got?
What was the worst question that I got? I would probably say the worst question is, why do you want to be a firefighter? Yeah, and coming for me, and it's like, they said, why and how long have you been wanting to be a firefighter?
8 months. I don't know, someone said you should do it.
Exactly. Like, I didn't know, and then me being just an honest guy, like, I just had to tell him the truth. I wasn't going to be, oh, it was a kid, it was a lifelong dream, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, why did you want to be a firefighter? And I was like, well, I've been a lifeguard for this entire time. You know, we've had firefighters come in and help out some of the people here. And I felt that I could do that job. Like, anybody got a little pissed off about that, but I think it's just like the next step from lifeguarding, to be honest. It's like level two.
I love asking that question. I think that's always my favorite question to ask, is when you talk to people who've been through the interview process and you ask them, what's the roughest question that you got? Because obviously I've been through quite a few oral boards and panel interviews, and I've been there and done that. And it's funny, you know, I always remember the toughest questions and the ones that I felt like I blew out of the water. Those are the only questions that I ever feel like I remember, because you have all the nuanced questions of, do you know this, or have you talked to these people, or have you done this, to just kind of see if you're that interested. But then you get the question like, why do you want to be a firefighter? Or, hey, what is the, like, my last interview, I was asked, what do you think is plaguing police officers the most, or law enforcement the most in society? And it's just one of those things that when you're thrown that question, you're like, oh, I looked at every book or any interview that I could find online to see what the best questions were, but that wasn't something that was in there. No one said that this is a common question you're going to see, or you're going to, you know,
get thrown. And I think it's got to be one of those questions to really kind of separate individuals, like, just, it's really get a feel of who that person is, you know? And I think maybe just me being honest and just being like, you know what, this is something that I think is just the next step, you know? That's all I try to push. And I was just like, I'm ready for it. Okay. And they're like, all right. But, you know, they don't never give you anything. They're just never, all of the chiefs. The chiefs are sitting there like that, and they're just having like the lowest ranked or EMS worker ask you these questions, you know, like, and that's the person you're supposed to be talking to, while the other ones are just judging you. You're like,
they're judging you and writing notes and,
yep.
Scribble, 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 scribble. Shit. Did I say something wrong? Did I do something wrong? Damn it.
So then after the oral boards, there was about a month that went by that says, all right, we'll let you know in about a month if you made it or not, you know? And that month went by. I ended up checking my email because I was still working at the pool and everything. And I got the email and it said, we're sorry, but you were not accepted into the 87th cadet class, blah, blah, blah. You know, this whole thing. And it said, but we might be possibly putting together a second class out of this pool. Which was really kind of unheard of, that they would do two classes out of the same one. And it says, so just make sure that you stay in shape, you're ready whenever you will. It's just no date, we'll let you know when we're actually planning on doing it. So I was like, nah, probably not. You know, it's not going to happen. Then I was like, probably about 3 months later, I ended up getting another email saying that I'd been accepted to the 88th. That was going to be starting that January. So I sat around for that whole year, you know, just like I went and applied for the fire department that 6 months, boom, boom. And then it just kind of shot around all the way till the next year. I didn't hit the academy until the year after I applied. So it was a really long process for sure.
You know what? That's exactly what I'm going through right now. I applied to be in our night academy here that was supposed to start in February this year. We had some people who had some issues and problems, and so they canceled the academy as far as instructors and leadership goes. Mm-hmm. And so now my email was a little bit different. It was, hey, you can do any day academy you want. Unfortunately, I have bills to pay, so I still got to work. But otherwise, you can do the night academy next year. Fantastic. Ours is a little bit shorter, though, so ours is only 10 months. We don't, you know.
Yeah, I get you. But yeah, so that was that. So I was like, all right, I guess I'm in the academy. And kind of went from there.
Yeah. So you've got this great support system. You've got this opportunity where you're in the academy, you're rolling through, and you get to the end of it. And how does, because I guess the difference is obviously you're in the academy. That doesn't mean you have a job, right?
No.
You still have to go through all the process to apply for a job and put in for jobs while you're paying for your academy?
No. So they're pretty much paying us like minimum wage to go to this academy. So technically we're like city employees. Okay. We are city employees, but we're at will employees. So they can come up with any excuse just to fire you. And they're trying to train, and they're actually, their job as instructors is to pretty much just weed out people that are not meant for the job, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they're just weeding you out this entire time. This 18-week academy just kind of keeps going and going and going, and people are just dropping out. I think we started with like 26, and we ended up graduating with only 17.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a pretty brutal academy, I'll say that. And so once you're doing that, then finally you pass your academy. Then after that, they send you out to the field where you actually have to do a year probation, and still you're an at-will employee. It doesn't guarantee that you still have a job as a firefighter. They're just trying to see if you fit the mold that they need. And then at the
end, for that department, I'm assuming, right?
Yes, for the department that we're in. And they have a book, a task book that you have to finish, the training, and then they have their final testing at the end of those 11 months technically. And if you pass all that stuff and they feel that you fit, then finally they'll officially like offer you the job of a fireman in the service. So you're not even considered a firefighter until you finish the academy and then your full first year. And then after that, then you're kind of in and then protected finally by like the union and all that stuff. But up until then, they could just be like, you know what, you're out.
I didn't like the way you looked at me. Goodbye.
Yep. Oh, you didn't make coffee this morning? Cool. that's obviously exaggeration, but yeah, like it's just anything. Like if they don't like your personality or you're just causing trouble, then obviously, I'm not saying that Albuquerque would ever do anything like that. You can't make coffee, you're out. They just want people that they know that are going to fit.
Oh, of course. You want teammates, you want brothers, you want people you can trust. This is, again, and this is the cool thing about being able to talk to different career fields within the mindset that we have, because all of us have this similar mindset. It's the idea that this is all your family, and you have to be able to trust one another with your life at that point. It's not as simple as just, hey, I trust you to make sure you make coffee in the morning. It's, I have to trust you to make coffee when it's your turn to make coffee, because later I got to trust you to, you know, if something happens to me, you're dragging me out or you're, you know, taking care of me as you need to. So
that is true. Yeah. And like, that's one thing with us is I think that I'm kind of happy that I chose the fire department as opposed to like police officers. You know, they're meant to be like lone wolves. They have to be able to handle things by themselves. And me, I'm just always been a person that loves people around me, creating families and stuff. Like, not saying that the police service is not a family, but I just think they have to have this sense of just being strong individuals as opposed to being a strong unit, which I think the fire department really focuses on, you know? we can't function alone. I'll tell you that.
I know. It's the downside of being a second responder. I mean, first responder.
Oh, got it.
Hey, you got to throw them back. You can't expect me not to throw them back. You know?
No, I love it. Like, yeah. And the funny thing is, I even say that to some cops out here. I'm like, hey, what's up, guys? And then they kind of ignore me. And I said, oh, a second responder saying hi to you. And then finally, they'll get their attention. And they're like, oh, okay.
All right. You're cool with it. We get it. You go make fun of yourself. I've gone on so many ride-alongs. I've gotten the opportunity to be part of so many pieces of the puzzle with cops and stuff like that lately that it's been phenomenal watching it. And then you see the difference, because you're right. Cops are, they're solo. They're lone wolves. They take care of business on their own for the most part. They may have a partner or a little bit of backup, unless you live in a town like I do where they ain't got nothing to do. So all 15 cops on duty end up at one call. But, and then you got the firefighter department, because I have some family that's in that, and they do fire stuff like that, and they're really a cohesive unit. And then you've got the paramedics, which are more like angry couples, because they're always together. Yes. And
that is probably the best way to put that, an angry couple. I love it.
So it's funny how the dynamic changes.
And we're like the visiting, whenever they see us, we're like the visiting in-laws. They're happy to see us, but not at the same time. They're just like, oh man, here you go.
Oh, yeah.
So we all work together. We all make it work. We're a whole dysfunctional family, all of us.
Absolutely love it. I love it. And that's the cool thing about, that's what I've been dying for with this whole podcast thing, because we've done a lot of cops and a lot of military lately. You're actually my first firefighter right now. I am happy that you decided that, hey, we're finally going to schedule a time, even if it is, what are we talking, 1 o'clock in the morning, my time. But this has been excellent. We are getting towards the end of time though. So I'm going to make sure I give my little shout outs and everything that I got to do. We'll do some final thought stuff and then we'll outro. Obviously, guys, you know that these podcasts are sponsored by Battle Rattle. It's this arm right here. That's Battle Rattle right here. Dell, I'll be making sure to get a Sheepdog Ops shirt out to you as a little appreciation and thank you for coming on and talking with me. We try not to do this as a paid thing, because we don't get paid for it. We just take the time to get people's story out there. So the least I can do is get you a badass shirt or a nice little tank top for you guys' summer heat out there. But I know that they've got some promos going on. You guys go check out battlerattle.com. You can find all this content there. You can find us on Anchor FM. That's where actually all of our sponsored stuff goes. So if you want to donate to the podcast, you want to email us, we have information to talk to us and get a hold of us. I know that recently we've had some people who were in crisis and stuff like that. We're actually reaching out to a few different crisis groups to be able to help you guys and service more people who are listening to this and give them resources. I've had a few people reach out to me who are going through some problems, you probably heard it on your end, Dell. It's one of those things. You take on so much stuff for so long by yourself, and you don't ask for help. And I think that's a huge, huge mistake. You're really doing yourself a disservice, because there's so many people out there that have gone through the same thing, that know the story, that are willing to listen and help you and tell you how they got through it. And that's across the board, paramedics, firefighters, cops, military guys, and that's all the branches, even the Coast Guard. But it really is. Don't do this alone, guys. Please don't do it alone. There's so many people, so many resources. You can always email the podcast at sheepdogmindset@gmail.com. I'm pretty much up almost all hours of the night, as you can tell, doing this stuff. I'm being able to reach out and help you guys as much as I can, or putting you in the right place to help you. And as we get off of that somber note, we'll go back to a little bit lighter note. Battle Rattle is going to have some cool stuff coming up. They've got some cool promo stuff coming up about buying so much money's worth and you get it like $25 off. You can check it on the Facebook page. You can check it on Twitter. You can check it on Instagram. We're all over YouTube and obviously all over the page. I think that's pretty much it for as far as making sure that they get what they need out there for everyone, because they really have hooked us up, all their designs and everything. They've got some really cool affiliate programs. If you're a gamer, they're starting to pay people to have their banner up on your stuff. If you haven't listened to the last couple episodes, that's actually something they're just starting to do. If you're gaming and you're trying to stream, I'm not joking, they're paying people to put up their banners on their streaming services. So
that's awesome.
You got Twitch, you got all Mixer, or whatever different things you got going on. I was going to quit this to do that because I'm pretty sure it pays more than what I'm getting here. but no, we love Battle Rattle. We appreciate everything you guys do. Mike, you guys over there, you always take care of us. We got some cool new designs coming out. They've got cool new designs coming out every single day. We've actually started adding some motorcycle stuff. So be sure to go check that out. Other than that, Del, do you have any final words and advice that you would love to give out to the people, the young people, since you're
the young ones? They're having the young takeover. But no, first off, I want to say thank you for having me. Like, obviously, this is probably the first time I've ever had anything like this. Actually, someone interested in something I do, I guess. But I really want to say I appreciate you guys having me. That was really awesome. And honestly, the only advice and the only thing I have for the young individuals that are going to be coming out is just be strong with yourself. Like, don't be intimidated by anything about being strong, being physically fast or whatever. If you are mentally strong, you can actually succeed in this type of field. Like, don't ever let anything else take that away from you, because this is the strongest muscle, I like to say. And I don't even think it's a muscle, but whatever. I honestly want to say, if you're mentally strong, you can definitely do it. And if you set your mind, it's all yours, man. And I hope to see new brothers and sisters out there for sure.
Absolutely. Every day. Remember, guys, he was Joe Schmo to firefighter. He didn't know anybody. He didn't bank on everything else that everyone had to get him where he's at. And I have to commend you for that, Del. I appreciate you coming on for sure. Getting the chance to have our first firefighter on the episode, have an episode with a firefighter and talk to them about their experience and what they've gone through, even at such a young career. We'll say young career. Yeah, it's not going to be super long. It's going to be young, but that's for another episode. Again, if you ever want to get on, there's anything that you guys want that you want to talk about, or anybody in your fire station that wants to talk about, you guys want to do a joint stuff, you guys sit on here and bullshit with me, I'm always available. You have my information. You're more than welcome to shoot me a message. I'd love to have you guys on anytime, any place. Obviously, I 1 o'clock in the morning, here I am recording this shit with you, because I just want to hear the story. And that's my favorite thing about this whole thing, is everyone has a story. I know Dell didn't think he did when I first met him, but everyone has a story, and somebody somewhere needed to hear it. So I hope you guys really get something out of this. And as we always do when we end these bad boys here, is don't be the sheep in the fight, be the dog.